Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. It is June 25th, and today we begin our science article. My name is Brandon, and we're on page 36 today. We're talking about robots, robot bees, in fact, and I have two wonderful panelists in the studio today helping me to discuss this. First, welcome Pauline.
Hi, everyone. I'm always glad to be here with you.
Do you know much about bees, Pauline? Are you a bee expert? I know I'm not.
I'm not a bee expert, although if I had to pick in between the two areas of expertise, bees or robots, I'm probably more interested in insects and bees, so I probably want more to say on that than on the robot
yes.
side.
Well, we've talked a lot about robots in advance. They seem to keep popping up. And Joe knows a little bit about robots, don't you?
I know about fictional robots that fight other large fictional robots.
All right, that's something.
That is something. But I'm glad to be talking about this because actually bee population is a very serious problem in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a really interesting article for those who enjoy honey and want to keep enjoying honey.
I love honey. I really do. And so I hope that we find a solution to this issue, and that's exactly what this article is about.
Yeah, and there's actually, bees, we automatically think of honey when we think about bees, but actually we'll see in this article they provide a lot of other benefits to humanity as well, so they're definitely an important insect to be thinking about and that we may need to find some solutions for, as we talked about already, since they're declining.
Yeah, and you may be wondering why are bees in decline? Well, there are pesticides that people, farmers and others are using that could be a potential problem. And also diseases could be a problem in destroying their habitats. And so these are some things that, challenges that we are facing. And so they have something here that scientists have come up with. And they're not the only ones. There are others who are developing robot bees, but it's just hopefully one solution to the problem. What does our deck say, Joe?
So our deck says, as bee populations dwindle, robot bees may pick up some of their pollination slack.
All right. And that word dwindle, Pauline?
That just means to decrease. And then actually the next part in here is kind of a play on words. I really like it, that the robot bees may pick up some slack for the pollinators. So to pick up slack means to help compensate for what somebody else or something else isn't able to do. So if your coworker is sick and isn't able to get some work done, you might pick up the slack and do it for him. But here it's a play on words because the robots are picking up the slack that bees, the low numbers of them, aren't able to pollinate as much. So they're not able to literally pick up pollen and move it around. So it's a play on word.
That's right, and the word pollination, many of you may already be familiar with that from school, of course, when you studied science, but maybe in English, not as familiar with it, but it's, of course, the relocation of pollen from one flower to another in order to assist in producing a seed, and so that's what bees do. They go to one flower, and some of the pollen sticks to the bee, and when they go to the next flower, it drops off some of that, and that helps to kind of, pollinate or cross-pollinate, and that's very important. It's important in ways we may not often think about. It's important not only, for producing seed and so forth, but also for the economy. It really makes a big difference, and for food and so forth. And what's amazing to me with things like this, that everything has a purpose, right? And some things it's hard to think about, what's the purpose of a mosquito? But a bee has a big purpose, maybe a bigger purpose than we would imagine. And when they're gone, we see the effects of it and we realize, hey, we have to do something about that, right? And so this article helps to address that issue. Well, if you have your magazine, please open it up to page 36 and we'll have our first reading for today.
Robot bees. As bee populations dwindle, robot bees may pick up some of their pollination slack. One day, gardeners might not just hear the buzz of bees among their flowers, but the whir of robots too. Scientists in Japan say they've managed to turn an unassuming drone into a remote-controlled pollinator by attaching horsehairs coated with a special sticky gel to its underbelly. The system, described in the journal Chem, is nowhere near ready to be sent to agricultural fields, but it could help pave the way to developing automated pollination techniques at a time when bee colonies are suffering precipitous declines. Flowers looking to get the pollen from their male parts into another bloom's female parts need an envoy to carry it from one to the other. Those third players are animals known as pollinators. A diverse group of critters that includes bees, butterflies, birds, and bats, among others.
Thank you, Joe. Nice job reading that for us today. Well, it starts off saying one day gardeners might not just hear the buzz of bees among their flowers, and so they might hear something else. Pauline, they may hear a machine.
Yeah, I really like this first sentence. So they give us two different sound words that we have in English. The buzz, so this is the sound of an insect, in this case a bee. But there's a new sound that you might hear in your gardens, which is the whir of robots. And a whirring sound, you know, because machines can make all sorts of sounds. It can be like a clunking sound or a really loud metallic sound. But here we're talking more about the sound of wings, or in this case there,
Kind of a vibrating sound.
Yeah, it's a vibrating wind type sound.
I actually had no idea how loud drones are. Until I was in a park and I saw someone playing with drones, and you could hear that whir from actually quite a distance, even though it's a small little device.
It's probably a good thing, because otherwise those things could be just up in the air and you don't
just
know
just watching
it. Yeah. So it's good that it has some sort of sound. Well, scientists in Japan say they've managed to turn an unassuming drone into a remote-controlled pollinator. That word unassuming is nice to know.
Yeah, I noticed that word too, and I started thinking about it. I was thinking, what a strange word, because unassuming basically means ordinary, not remarkable. But it would be a hard one to guess the meaning, because to assume just means to guess something. I guess the idea is that if you were to guess, you wouldn't think this was particularly special, but it actually... We're saying it actually is.
Yeah, it doesn't draw a lot of attention to itself. It's a very modest device. And so this one is remote controlled, and it's used to pollinate. It's a pollinator. And what do they attach to it? This is kind of interesting.
This is fascinating. They attach horse hairs, and they coat it with this special sticky gel to its underbelly. And here, they're using underbelly in a very interesting way. They're just talking about the sort of bottom portion of the drone, that part that's kind of the bottom.
Yeah, and we have a photo of it right there at the top of page 36. If you're wondering about the size, it's 4 centimeters wide, and it weighs 15 grams, and so it's a very small device.
I have to say, I read this entire article before ever noticing the picture, so I had a whole different imagined picture of what it looked like. It's actually bigger than I expected it to be.
Yeah, it is. And I love the fact that they have those horse hairs on there, and that someone actually came up with that. Well, the system described in the journal Chem is nowhere near ready to be sent to agricultural fields. So, Joe, they're still doing a lot of work on this, which is often the case. You know, we get the news out there and they're working on something, but it's maybe not the finished product.
Right. Often what happens with these sorts of experiments, you do a little pilot, and then you start to share information, and I think here you might even see agricultural investors maybe start to pour money in, and then you can mass produce or keep testing.
True.
Right? So I think first you show the science, hey, this works, and then you try to get more people involved.
Right. So this could lead to something else. That's why they use this phrase, pave the way.
Right. It's going to hopefully lead or help us get to the point where they can develop automated pollination techniques at a time when bee colonies are suffering precipitous declines. I like this word, precipitous. It just means a sudden, rapid, in this case, decline, so fall. You could also have a precipitous incline, I guess, but usually we use it when we're talking about a sudden drop.
Yeah, and this has been going on for a while. I'm sure many of you listeners have heard about the decline in bee populations, and we've discussed some of the reasons for that already. And it's kind of sad that we have to use this kind of technology to try and replace bees. Hopefully there would be other solutions that would help to keep those natural, bees in their natural habitat.
Yeah, I thought about that a lot as I was reading this article. I hope this isn't the complete solution in people's minds for this issue that we're having in the decline of bees. But we have to be honest about the fact that it is a problem, and maybe it can help. It could be this phrase we used earlier, pick up the slack with the issue that's occurring, while many others in scientific fields are also looking into different ways to help the bee population. So I would hope the ultimate goal was that someday we would see the bee population come back in healthy numbers, but there may also be some maybe realistic cynicism or something, or just honesty about the fact that that might take a very long time to reverse that trend. And in the meantime, there's a lot of negative consequences to not having pollinators out there. So it's a good, maybe a really good solution in the meantime.
Something that's very fascinating about the bee population issue, I remember reading a lot of articles that described it as its own sort of ecological and economic crisis.
Yeah.
Where by having these bee colonies suffer such great losses. I mean, you're talking about you own a bee colony, so you have an apiary, the fancy word for bee colony, and you're taking care of that, and you come out and thousands of your bees are just dead.
Yeah.
And how that stops production of honey, stops production of food crops, it does all this damage. And so just the severity of the situation, you can see how far we've come from just trying to protect bees to saying, well, we need some kind of substitute.
Yes. So hopefully this will at least kind of stand in the gap while they look for other solutions to, protect the bees, and hopefully that population will go back up to where it needs to be. But, well, the flowers need something, right? And this gets into, how bees pollinate, and what do they tell us here?
So we learn about the process of pollination a little more technically here. It says flowers they need pollen from their male parts to go to the female parts of the blossom, and they need something they say it needs an envoy to carry it from one to another. So they need something to pick up the pollen in one flower and bring it to another where they're going to be, so that they're able to reproduce.
Like a messenger or an agent to do that. And we use this word a lot of times maybe with governments, right? You have an envoy, government envoy.
I did a little reading on the internet about this, because it reminded me of some questions. I was a little fuzzy on plant anatomy and how that all works.
Yeah,
and
it's been a while.
So it was just curious, and I do think it's really interesting to learn. There are some plants, like some squash plants, they'll put out one flower that's the male flower, and then they'll have other flowers that are female flowers, maybe even on the exact same plant, but they need an insect, say like the bee, to come in and pollinate, to cross those together, to put them together so that they can get to the next step of creating fruit and then the seeds that will reproduce. There's other plants that it's just the whole plant is a female plant, and they need to take the flowers from that plant, or the pollen from the flowers from that plant, over to the plant that is a male plant. So different kinds of plants have different systems for that, but most of them need a pollinator.
Yeah, and some of them, though, are self-pollinating.
That's true.
And so it's really interesting. I was reading that, too. And it's interesting how all of this works. It's in sixth grade, or maybe some in college, but it's been a long time since I've studied this, so it's good to go back and look up the facts.
See, it's funny. For me, I have a pollen allergy. And so in my home state in Virginia, when it's pollen season, I can barely go outside because there are so many trees in our area, and your car will be coated with pollen, just this yellow kind of substance.
Yeah.
That's how many, I don't know if it's like that where you're from.
There's definitely problems with pollen from time to time, yeah.
Yeah, so I would have to stay inside for like a good first month of that sort of season.
Wow.
That's bad. Yeah, my pollen allergy is really bad.
Wow. Well, that's not a good thing, and of course this gives us kind of an insight to the importance of bees and what the work that they're actually doing. And then it continues on in line 19. It says those third players are animals known as pollinators, a diverse group of critters that include or that includes bees, butterflies, birds, and bats, among others. And so it's not just bees, but they are the main ones, as we'll find out later. So next we're going to talk more about the decline of bee populations. So let's find out about that in our last reading for today.
In decline, animal pollinators are needed for the reproduction of 90% of flowering plants and one-third of human food crops, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Chief among those are bees. But many bee populations in the United States have been in steep decline in recent decades, likely due to a combination of factors, including agricultural chemicals, invasive species, and climate change. Thus, the decline of bees isn't just worrisome because it could disrupt ecosystems, but also because it could disrupt agriculture and the economy. People have been trying to come up with replacement techniques, the study authors say, but none of them are especially effective yet. One pollination technique requires the physical transfer of pollen with an artist's brush or cotton swab from male to female flowers, the authors wrote. Unfortunately, this requires much time and effort. Another approach uses a spray machine. However, this machine pollination has a low pollination success rate.
All right, well, animal pollinators are needed for a lot of things, for the reproduction of 90% of flowering plants and one-third of human food crops. So this really gives us insight to how important these animals are.
Yeah, that's a shocking number, 90% of all flowering plants. Like, that's just incredible. I can't imagine in a world in which 90% of the flowering plants were just suddenly gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we need them for food as well, right? And so, you know, a lot of times we maybe hear stories and we think, oh, that's sad. But when we get some information about how that really affects us, you know, food on our table, then people, I think, maybe will start to pay attention even more.
Right. You don't understand the repercussions of things. Mm. And then when you really start to get into the numbers and how that affects food production and just life in general, you start to understand the gravity of the situation.
And also, kind of sheds light on the way we do things these days. We mass produce lots of things and we try to do things quickly, which, because we love convenience, but sometimes, you know, the consequences are there and we have to maybe change our habits. And so, this article highlights that. Well, this information comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service, a long title, but that's where the information comes from. And then we get into more information about the bees. Chief among these pollinators, they are the bees. They're the main ones. When we see that word chief, that just talking about the most important ones. And, they give us more information about what's going on in the U.S.
Right. The article notes that many bee populations in the United States have been in steep decline, and not just recently, but in recent decades. And there are all these different factors that could be involved, including agricultural chemicals, invasive species, and even climate change. So there are many factors, many facets to this problem.
Yeah, that term invasive species just means that maybe there are certain insects or whatever species they're referring to. They're moving into, a lot of them are moving to an area and they're difficult to stop, and that can cause a lot of problems. And so I mentioned some of these issues earlier. I think disease also could be a problem. And so all of these things combined together are causing this decline. So the decline of bees isn't just worrisome because it could disrupt ecosystems, but what's the other reason?
Well, it could also disrupt agriculture and the economy. We've mentioned the economy a few times here, and really they're interconnected, right? Your agricultural world is based, it's an economy. We all buy food, so that's part of the economy. And all of a sudden, if the cost of food, if you're all of your produce is suddenly goes skyrockets really high expensive because they can't produce as much because there aren't enough pollinators. So that's going to affect everybody's budgets. That's going to affect everybody's quality of life. So it affects, eventually it would affect all of us if this really continues.
Right. Especially as we're talking about human food crops, which very few of us own and run farms anymore, mm-hmm. where we're producing our own food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of it's very centralized, and sometimes the danger of a centralized system is when something goes wrong, it impacts the, like, a large area of food crops, and then all of a sudden there's a very intense scarcity,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have your own garden or anything to kind of take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to mention another English phrase that we use sometimes. Brandon was talking about how you hear about an issue in the news, maybe an environmental issue or a social issue, and you, like Brandon was saying, you think, oh, that's sad, that's too bad, but it doesn't really hit home.
Mm.
That was the phrase that I was thinking mm-hmm. of, is hitting home,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it hits home when you suddenly realize, wait, groceries could be how much
right.
more expensive?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
you know, that's that moment when you realize how practically important it is
yeah.
to you.
And you don't usually connect the dots, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking about bees all the time, right? But you are thinking about eating. And so that really does hit home. And they use a term here that we have talked about before. It talks about disrupting ecosystems. And an ecosystem is just all the plants and animals that live in a specific area. And they have a relationship, you know, with each other. And so an ecosystem is a big thing. And if that's disrupted, it can cause a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so people have been trying to come up with replacement techniques, the study authors say, but none of them are especially effective yet. And so they're testing this technique out to see if it will be especially effective. And we get some information here from the authors, don't we?
Right. So first off, they tell us about a couple other techniques that have been tried and I think maybe are still being experimented with, but have not been particularly effective. So the first one they tell us about is a pollination technique that requires the physical transfer of pollen with an artist's brush or cotton swab. So I think you're actually talking about a human taking a paintbrush, walking from one flower,
yeah.
putting it in the flower, and then going to another one.
Yes.
And putting, I mean, you can just imagine how labor intensive that is. And that is what it says here. Unfortunately, this requires much time and effort. I mean, can you imagine
yeah.
a huge agricultural field and having to have people walk around to every flower and put a paintbrush in it? And I
right.
mean, that's just crazy.
Doesn't seem very efficient, does it? But it would create many jobs, maybe.
You know, if you don't have a job, you can be a pollinator.
There you go.
But the pollinators make it look so easy. You know, bees just kind of buzz around, go over to a flower, go over to another flower. They make it look easy. And
mm-hmm.
then we start doing it. It's just backbreaking and
yeah.
time intensive.
Right. It takes a lot of effort. Well, it does require a lot of time and effort. And there's another approach that uses a spray machine, but this machine pollination has a low pollination success rate, meaning that it doesn't work very well.
Although I love that they're taking us through, like, kind of like the, you know, the process that they've gone through, brainstorming. You can just imagine all of these people thinking, like, okay, without bees, what we can do? We could take paintbrushes and dip it in and out of the different flowers. Oh, wait, that's going to take forever.
Yeah.
I know, we could spray the pollen everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, they kind of sound like crazy ideas, but you're also, I think it reminds you of what, like, a difficult challenge this is and how urgent it is. So they're willing to just try anything they can think of to try and offset this pretty major crisis that we're at least approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And while those are ingenuitive ideas, and you know, it seems like it has some potential, it doesn't sound like they've had a very high success rate with it.
You know, and we're talking a lot about bees, but, you know, there are problems with other insects or animals as well, right?
Right. I mean, we know about the monarchs, the butterflies in the United States are really famous ones, the ones that do the migration from Canada through the States down to
mm-hmm.
Mexico. They do a mass migration, which means like they all fly together, or many of them do, in this big group down to Mexico. And
mm-hmm.
because it's all one huge mass, people have been able to really see very dramatically the drop in their population. So, yeah, bees certainly aren't the only ones, although bees are special in the special connection they have to our economy and to our
yeah.
agriculture.
They are very important. And Pauline, you, I think, have had some experience, like, seeing bees being transported or something?
Well, I've heard about it. It made the news in Montana when I was there a while back, because another one of the ingenuitive solutions people have come up with for this problem is that there are people who will pack a truck full of honeybees and bring them around the country to the different large fields that need pollinating during that time and, you know, try and kind of shuffle them around the United States. Well, when I was in Montana, one of those trucks tipped over. There was an accident, so all of these bees got out and were just a huge, you know, cloud of them over the highway. So that was a little bit of a crazy thing.
I would say so. That's pretty intense. Well, they're trying all sorts of things, aren't they, Joe, to help people, you know, help the pollinators to get to where they need to be, and hopefully all of these solutions coming together will work.
Right, they're just trying anything and everything and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
Well, and hopefully it also serves as a lesson to us individually and to our governments and communities to be paying attention to the environment around us, to the natural habitat that we're connected to, and hopefully we'll be able to stop future things like this from becoming such a major issue. I hope that we will care more about environmental conservation and caring for populations before it becomes a crisis point like the bees seem to have come to.
Very good point. Well, we have much more to talk about concerning this issue, so we hope you will come back tomorrow for day two of this month's science article, Robot Bees, a very interesting topic, and it highlights an important issue that hopefully will get us all thinking. Well, we hope you'll join us tomorrow. Until then, this is Brandon.
I'm Pauline.
I'm Joe.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.